to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. And I'm really pleased to have with me today, Mackie Musavi. And I came to know you, Mackie, as we spoke just a few minutes ago, really by accident, because I received an email or something on LinkedIn, possibly, that was sharing an invitation to attend a book review. And I kind of like, okay, I enjoy reading. I love reading. Mm-hmm. And I fill a lot of my time with reading books that help me with personal growth. Here I am at this point in my life, and I'm still reading personal growth. You think that, you know, some point in time, you may say, okay, I've got this. But that just doesn't happen with me.
It does not happen.
And I know it doesn't happen with you after getting to know you and after we sat together through the book club meeting. And so the title of the book, and this is what caught me, Mackie, as I shared just a few minutes ago, was the title of your book. And I think the words that you use in the title is just, it's a catcher. It really got my attention. And the name of the book is The High Achiever's Guide. And I love that part, but here's what really got me. Transform your success mindset and begin the quest to fulfillment. And there's three words in there that I really love. Transform, mindset, and fulfillment. So with that in mind, Mackie, Welcome to the episode today, and share a little bit about us, your story, and because your story is what brought you into writing this book, and it's the foundation for who you are today. So I'm very interested for our listeners to learn about you. So I'm going to let you share it.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about this. So my story, I'll just give a summary and we can, you know, dive in more if you'd like, but so I'm a first-generation American. My parents settled in Manhattan, Kansas. That's where I was born and raised. Great, great place to grow up. But I did have a bit of a challenging childhood. My parents have both been through quite a lot in their early lives that really influenced the way that they just interacted with me as their child and the world more broadly. And from a very early age, I had to figure out, there were just some things I wasn't getting from my home life that I needed to find a way to get in order to thrive, you know, as a child growing up. So one of the things that I figured out very early on was that if I just applied myself and was a very good student, that I would get some of that attention, recognition, more positive feedback that I was really seeking from teachers and other adults. And it worked. You know, I was a great student. I got lots of great positive feedback from teachers, and what it did was kind of set me up for a lifelong pattern, even though I didn't know that at the time, where achievement became my vehicle for getting what I needed from other people and to feel like I was enough of whatever, you know, I happened to be worried about. That continued through my academic career. And then when I got into my corporate career, it really served me well for a while. I think one of the trickiest things about coping mechanisms that we adopt at early ages is that they work, and that's why we stick with them. But at some point they stop working. And unfortunately, we're not like computers that can run virus scans and get updates. We have to be fully awake and aware to do that for ourselves. And it wasn't until I was into my, you know, by all accounts, very successful corporate career that I recognized that despite my achievements, and no matter what point I got to, and no matter how much recognition or I had or money I was making, that I was just a fundamentally unhappy and miserable person. It was at that point when I started to go into some very deep personal development work that I recognized this achievement orientation I had that was giving me the validation that I was seeking was also how I was getting through my corporate career. And it had run its course. Essentially, I recognized that continuing to seek what I need from the outside is no longer going to work. So now I'm in really big trouble and I have to figure out what to do next.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you would, that particular scenario, receiving accolades from your achievement and approval from the outside world, but that doesn't necessarily translate to internal fulfillment. That's what you were experiencing, is that you weren't having that main fulfillment. And in my dental career, I had the same thing, Mackie, is that for a long time I had a general practice, dental practice, mm-hmm. and I really loved that. I loved doing that form of just kind of basic general dentistry, but I realized that there was something more to dentistry, and what I was accomplishing out here wasn't giving me the fulfillment inside, mm-hmm. and I sought out a way to create a higher level of fulfillment. That's where the richness of life comes through, I believe.
I completely
agree. Talk to me about that.
Absolutely. You know, that it's such a good point. I think one of the things that really struck me when I was in that space, you know, I was working in an organization that had just lots of highly educated, very talented, smart people. And when I looked around, I just recognized, you know, most of us are in this space where there's always a carrot dangling. There's always a goal to hit. There's always something to chase after and achieve. But despite what I or a lot of these people that I worked with were achieving, it just didn't fill that void. What I have come to recognize is that we are very, you know, very, very conditioned to seek out what is tangible. We think about the material aspect of what we're achieving. It's the money, it's the title, it's whatever toys we can buy, the house, the vacations we go on. And especially now, but even before, there's such a reinforcement of that through social media and other things that we consume that basically say, this is what it means to be successful. The hidden promise in that is actually a completely empty lie, is that if you have those things, the fulfillment will come, right? Like mm-hmm. fulfillment is a byproduct of having those achievements and having those things. The reality is that we have to put the intangible elements of what feels fulfilling to us front and center, and then let everything else flow from there. Most of the time, people are setting goals that don't have any real substance. You know, they're the next logical step, for instance. So let's say you're a producer of some kind and you're thinking, well, I made this much money last year, so now my next goal is to make this much money this year. That's a logical, you know, step to take. We're always encouraged to try to do more than we did before. But the challenge is that if doing that the first time didn't really have a payoff, there's nothing magical about doing it a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, right? We continue to do the same things thinking that, well, one of these times, one of the achievements I land on is actually going to lead to the fulfillment. And we have it all backwards. We have to lead with what we know will be fulfilling to us. And sometimes we don't know what that is yet. And then let everything else flow from there. And, you know, 50% of the time, if you do that, the things that you have set your sights on as goals to achieve will fall away, because you will recognize there is no substance here. I'm just doing this because somebody told me I should, or it's an expectation. I don't actually care. And those are the goals that will lead you to that place of feeling unfulfilled.
So true. I experienced that in my career, and it came to a point, and that's why I pivoted at one point and took my practice into a realm which I felt was going to give me more fulfillment, and it actually did, far greater than I ever imagined, was to go into cosmetic dentistry. And, you know, when I made the transition, you know, some people I know were saying, oh, cosmetic dentistry is going in that because of the vanity aspect and, you know, the financial success possibilities and yada, yada. But that wasn't at all why I went into it. I went into it because I did a case early on in this transformational process, and the response by the patient afterwards, it shocked me. They were overwhelmed with excitement and emotion. She wept once the cosmetic case was done, and I thought, whoa, I've blown this. She's really, I've, no, it was quite the opposite. She was so excited because what she was doing in her mind, she was imagining herself now in her future self and her future happiness. And I was a part of helping create that. And once I got home that evening, I gave that a lot of thought because it was so overwhelming to me emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I participated in something big in helping this person with their life and their future. That was fulfilling. And you know what you're talking about, Mackie, is you know, a lot of our life and our goals and whatever are based on transactional means where mm-hmm. we're going to do this. And we want in return the finances, or we want in return the beautiful home, the extra car, the boat, you know, all this lifestyle. And, you know, as we all know, you get something new like that, and after a while, it's not very new. And, you know, the excitement and the joy of it fades away. But when you have, and I'm going to go into the word, one of the three words I liked in your title, transformation. When you go through a transformational process and you're helping other people transform their lives with the product or your presence or your awareness, as you alluded to in your book, when you do that, there is such a level of fulfillment that is just hard to understand. And a lot of people that haven't experienced that don't know what you're talking about.
That's exactly right. They just know that there's something missing. You know, it's something very like hard to define.
Yeah.
Yes, that is so very true. And a huge piece of that is that, you know, once again, back to our conditioning, we're very conditioned to lead with our minds and with our cerebral, logical, analytical sides, right? We think, well, let me think this through. Let me think about what that's going to mean. Now I'm going to, you know, do some mental strategy around how I'm going to achieve a certain thing. And what happens is we completely forget that we're really emotional beings and our fulfillment comes from the emotional side of who we are. And yet we are always pushing that side of ourselves away, you know, especially if it's uncomfortable. Well, I'm not really happy, but I can't look at that. So let me just not deal with it. I'm going to avoid it. And I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing because that's more comfortable.
Yeah.
But the reality is that in order to have that transformation, and especially in the work that I do, you know, the work I do with folks is very, very deep. I have a background in counseling. And so we really do look at, we're not just talking about organizing your calendar and setting a different goal. We're talking about what do you want? What do you not allow yourself to have? What are you afraid you can't do? Where does your anxiety that you're not enough really kick in? And how are those things keeping you in this very narrow path where you see the possibilities as very limited? Because the reality is all the lifestyle things that you said are wonderful, amazing things to have. If the emotional fulfillment or the emotional presence is there with it,
yeah.
Having those things without that is meaningless. You may have the short-term payoff like you talked about, but really at the end of the day, there's nothing that can replace that sense that I am enough. I know that what I do or who I am is of value just because of who I am. It's intrinsic. I don't have to do anything, achieve anything. Like, it's just my presence, right? And I know that these things that I want to do are important in some way, shape, or form. And so I'm able to be sufficiently detached from what other people think or expect in order to go down that path. These are not things that we're taught to do. We're in fact taught to do the opposite. And I'll get on my little capitalism soapbox for a minute because there's a lot of great things about capitalism. But one thing that came out of the Industrial Revolution that we still double down on in our current achievement orientation is this idea that in order to be valuable, you must be productive. And the more productive you are, the more rewarded you will be. And it serves those that put us in that machinery for us to be as productive as possible because everything drives profit. And we're just mm-hmm. part of this big machinery we're not even really stopping to think about. But does this work for me or do I even care? Or is that even what I want? We don't ask. We just say, well, I'm doing all the things I'm supposed to do. And so therefore, I'm very confused about why I'm not happy. And it's often people will do that for a while. And then we refer to something called a midlife crisis, which in my opinion is really an awakening. Usually when we wake up to a reality, it's somewhat unpleasant because we have been operating on autopilot. We really haven't been conscious. But that sense that like, this isn't okay. And this isn't where I want to be is actually such an important realization to embrace versus one to shy away from. You know, you'll see the stereotypical, well, I got to go buy a toy now or buy a car or step out on my relationship because I'm so unfulfilled. I just got to go get a win. But the reality is that's your opportunity to say, I need to take stock and be willing to be uncomfortable for a little while I figure out, how did I get here? And how is this not working for me so that I can start to figure out where I want to be instead? Just not something that we do, which is why I felt it was so important to write this book and have that message out there for people who find themselves in that place, especially in the archetype of a type A high achiever, which is so driven to just keep doing what they're doing and to be very productive, it becomes almost compulsive. Mm-hmm. And there's a real need to slow down and be like, I need to marinate in this discomfort for a little bit and really get clear on what's going on here.
Yeah. Yeah. You get on that hamster wheel and that's all that you know. And you don't know how to step out of that. The thing I like about your book, and I had to chuckle a number of times, was your brute honesty.
I've never had that feedback before.
I loved it. Let's see, there was one thing in there that it says, don't just pray. Get out there and just row your own damn boat. And I love that. And that's the way I look at things, Mackie, is take responsibility and be very, let's see, one other thing, brute honesty. And what I looked at that with from what I took from the book is with yourself. Mm-hmm. Be brutally honest with yourself. Talk about that.
Yeah, you know, it's critically important. We can't labor under delusion and be fulfilled. It's just those two things don't go together. And, you know, one of the things that I realized for myself was when I started to peel back the layers of what I had been doing and why it wasn't working, there were things in there that weren't flattering, definitely. But there was so much power in acknowledging that. There's so much power in acknowledging what we see as weaknesses. And it's incredibly important to get to a place where you, as much as possible, suspend self-judgment. You know, my background is in science. I have a master's degree in genetic counseling. So I've always kind of had this scientific piece of myself that's like very experimental and observation-based. And what I love to tell my clients is just be an observer. You know, everybody has the things that they're struggling with. And it's neither good nor bad. It just is. There's nothing to judge. You just need to take stock. You have to take inventory of what those things are. There's so much power in looking at what you've been avoiding because then you can leverage it in making those changes instead of pretending they don't exist. There's no possibility of bypassing the process here. That's one thing that I think, unfortunately, some of our popular culture has put out there. Like if you just think positively or, you know, if you meditate a lot and you envision your life, then all these amazing things are going to happen to you. A lot of law of attraction focus, which I believe in the law of attraction. I'm not poo-pooing that, but you can't bypass the process of figuring out, you know, why does your life right now look and feel the way that it does? Because you are the creator of that. How can you be a creator of something different? And until you own that, what we consider unflattering stuff, you just don't have the power. It gives you power when you look at those things because you're no longer passive. You can take the reins back. You're no longer a victim of circumstance. You're deciding, ah, that just doesn't work for me. And so what are my options for doing something differently? And you can own making a different decision, setting a boundary, cutting off a relationship, walking away from a role. It gives you so many opportunities to make choices and be back in the driver's seat when you're willing to look at the ways in which you have been a part of where you are.
You know, you talked about the mindset there, and when and we talked about the hamster wheel. When people get caught up in this, and they're overwhelmed by the hamster wheel effect, what are some ways for them, some tangible ways for them to deal with this, Mackie, and to where they can come out on the other end and maybe not have it totally taken care of, but they're on a path and a journey, realizing that that journey just never ends. Share with us some ways with which they can start that process? Because I know part of it is courage and looking at themselves, but get a little definitive here with us.
Sure. One really practical thing you can do is, let's say that there's a day-to-day overwhelm that's just part of being on that hamster wheel. There's too many things going on, too many things coming at you. You've got work, kids, family, all the things maybe. Is to take, to be very conscious. So once again, we get into autopilot mode and we can get used to anything, you know. So even the really bad daily routine that's leading to the stress and the anxiety, we can become accustomed to it. One thing to do is to be so conscious that every single time something comes up for you to do, you're asking yourself, is this a priority for me? Is this a priority? Am I doing this by default? Am I doing it just because someone's asking me to? Have I entered a space where nothing is a priority, everything has equal importance, and therefore I'm not able to decide what gets my attention? That is one of the most important first steps you can take, because yeah, you're getting text messages, phone calls, emails, there's all these things you're being asked to do, but they're not all equally important. And if you're in a place where you're telling yourself that they are, that needs to change, because they're not. And you're the one that is in control of prioritizing what gets your time and attention. And now, to refer back to the discomfort, is it going to be kind of weird to not immediately respond sometimes to the email, the text, or the thing that you're habitually in that place of being very immediate in your responses? Yeah, it's going to be really uncomfortable, because one of the things we tell ourselves is, well, that's just really fast. And if I just get it out of my way, then I'll feel a lot better, right? It's that compulsion.
Yeah.
But the reality is, how many of those things are you doing that are now eating up all the time you have in your day, so that the things that actually matter to you the most, there's nothing left for them because you're so obsessed with being productive or checking things off a list or just staying afloat? If you can make it a habit, and the first couple days it's hard, but then it becomes easier and easier, is every single time you're making a decision to do something, stop and take stock for a second and ask yourself, does this need to happen right now? Yes or no? If the answer is no, don't do it. What is that thing taking you away from? How is it eating up your time? That is one of the most important first steps that you can take, is to be consciously aware enough to ask yourself, why am I doing this? Does it matter? And then choose accordingly.
Yeah. For someone who does not have the willpower to stay in that boat and that commitment with prioritizing, what else can they do? What would be next, Mackie, for them to look at as to, but they really deeply want to change. What is something else that they can do that can come back and help them reprioritize their priorities?
I think everyone has an example of something they've committed to successfully. So let me give you an example. Let's say that there is someone who has a very busy job, lots going on, lots of commitments, but at some point in their life, maybe they were an athlete. Or maybe they had a goal to run a marathon, or maybe they had a goal to learn to cook really well or learn how to play an instrument. And they saw that through. It can be important and helpful to look back on something that you did stick with successfully. One of the things that becomes a stumbling block in this space is that people get overwhelmed because they think, well, I've been this person for 40, 50, 60 years, and I don't know, how am I going to change that? It's too much. It's overwhelming, right? The reality, though, is that what feels like 1,000 different things to you, like death by 1,000 paper cuts and your mindset and the challenges that you face, is that usually it boils down to just a handful of the same themes happening over and over and over again. They just show up a little differently in the different places of your life. So if you get overwhelmed and you feel like, okay, it's just way too much and I don't know how to stick with this because the commitment part's important, pick something very small. It's actually in the very small steps that you take that you build that mental muscle that will give you the strength to take on the next bigger thing and the next bigger thing. An example I could use is, let's say that there's someone in your life who's very challenging, and every time you see the phone ring and it's them, you just, you know, you immediately get all bent out of shape because you know it's going to be an annoying conversation. They're going to ask you for something. They're going to talk about themselves and you're not going to get a moment to get a word in edgewise. just decide, okay, when this person calls me, the only thing I'm working on right now is, what do I do the next time the phone rings?
Yeah.
Do I answer? If I answer, am I answering and setting a boundary? If I don't answer, am I okay with just letting them blow me up with texts and phone calls because normally I answer? Like, what's the one tiny little thing that I can shepherd myself through so that I can see that I'm capable of this?
Yes.
Because it really is in these little, small, incremental changes that you make where all of the momentum builds to make the larger changes.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. I've always adhered to the, by the inch, it's a cinch. By the yard, it's hard. And success is the result of 100, maybe 500 little inch successes, because each success builds momentum, builds confidence, and gives you a stronger spine and element of courage moving forward. And we let the task at times just overwhelm us, and we look at the enormity of the task, and we just go, I can't do that. Therefore, we don't even start looking at it by the inch. A lot of times we're just very impatient also. You know, we want the success now, and we're not willing to put the work into it. But, you know, bottom line, Mackie, is, as we're talking, it's the lack of courage of really looking at yourself very honestly.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And, you know, for your audience in particular with the dentistry background, you know, anybody who feels that way needs a reality check. So let's do the brute honesty thing for a moment. You committed to your path. You did not become a dentist over a one-year program online. You know, that was a commitment. It was a commitment from the beginning to get your education, to do what you needed to do clinically, to take your boards, and then to be in the position to be a practitioner. This isn't any different. Right? This is, and it's easier to prioritize things like that because you think, well, I'm on a mission and this is going to set me up nicely for a good living and I'm going to be able to have all these things. And plus, I'm good at this and I'm interested in the science and whatever. Lots of reasons, right? For whatever reason, it is so hard for us to decide that we are worth the effort of the time and investment that we will routinely put towards other things. And that a lot of your listeners have done in spades because of who they are, you know, and the services they've provided to patients over the years. You didn't get that overnight. There is no overnight here either. But the really good news is if you are diligent and committed, it does not take nearly as long as you think. When I work with clients, I work with them for 6 months. It is inevitable that at the end of 6 months, they will say, I feel like a different person.
Interesting.
I feel like a different person. I'm doing things I never would have thought I could do. I am not even thinking about the things that used to tie me up in knots. It doesn't take as long as you think. It just takes persistence and commitment because, you know, there's no motivation is not a real thing. Motivation is a spark, but it's not going to carry you through the entire process. So you've got to have something where if you're asking yourself, I'm so stressed and miserable right now, if my life could be totally different in 6 to 12 months, if I did these things, let me think about how I would prefer to feel, not what I'm doing, but I'm stressed, anxious, overwhelmed. If I could feel peaceful, energized, aligned, what would that be worth to me? Well, it would be worth any amount of effort. So do it for 6 months, see where you get to, you know, and the really beautiful thing is that the payoff starts to happen well before that. You don't have to wait to get to the finish. And there's no finish line, as we were talking about, we're always expanding and growing, but the resilience you build in order to be in tune with yourself and see when you're starting to have some of the same challenges you had before, so you can shift right back into that gear of being aware and being very deliberate. It's a priceless opportunity that you will apply over the course of your life if you are willing to make the initial commitment.
That's awesome. 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I love that because I think a lot of people think that, you know, or worry or are concerned that, number one, I don't know how to accomplish this. And number two is it's got to be a 2, 3, 5 year process. But to start to realize and within 6 months come to the realization that they are a very different person. Mm-hmm. Wow, I love that. Mm-hmm. Share with me a little bit and the audience what that 6 months process kind of looks like, Mackie.
Sure.
On the average.
Yeah, so on average, and that's great that you said on the average, because you know, I do have some clients who they were like, hey, can we just continue to work together, maybe in a reduced capacity? And then I'll see them a couple of years after they've finished and they will tell me, I've got to tell you about the last couple of years, because the work is never done, right? You just continue to keep applying what you've learned and your life continues to change. And it's beautiful. And then they'll tell me, I said something to somebody else that you said to me, and they like blew their mind. And so that there's a ripple effect of them now being able to, you know, impart some of their wisdom on other people. The 6 month process. So the beginning of it is, you know, it's uncomfortable. You know, I can't lie about that. We do an assessment. I have my own personal assessment that I use where I ask a bunch of questions and try to get to the heart of, you know, where have you been and what have some of your challenges been and how long have you been trying to make these changes? Where would you rather be? You know, kind of rate these areas of your life. And the very first session we have is usually 90 minutes to 2 hours, because we're going to talk about that. I'm going to ask a lot of questions. We're going to go on tangents. And that's my first opportunity to see, okay, I'm seeing the dots, they're connecting. You know, the thing that you're doing over here personally is showing up professionally. And, you know, so here's some themes that we're identifying. And by the conclusion of that meeting, I'm sharing, here's the themes I'm seeing and getting the buy-in of the person I'm working with. Does that resonate with you? And does this feel like a good place to start? And then from there, we're on an every 2 week cadence. We meet for an hour every 2 weeks. I assign homework between every session, homework, which is basically, here's what I want you to think about, journal about, do, set boundaries around, make decisions around, you know, identify whatever it is that we're in. But the beauty of the process is that we're really using whatever's happening in that person's life organically. So there's always opportunities being presented to us in our lives every single day to see, this is how this is playing out. And I'm able to use the tools that I'm teaching and that I use to apply to whatever's happening in that person's life, because that's where they're going to get the most power. It's happening right now. Let's deal with it. And mm-hmm. often I'm asking them to do things they've never done. Set a boundary. Walk away from something. Decide they're going to put their laptop away at night. They're not going to be in that rat race of working every single night. Or they're going to put their phone away during dinner time, because looking at their phone during dinner has been a huge problem and it's adding to their stress and anxiety. So some of it's these small behavioral shifts that we've talked about. And some of it is that deep personal examination where we're identifying what's not working for you, and let's do the dump of everything that's not working for you. And that's at the beginning of the process. And that is typically when people get very uncomfortable, because they're having mm-hmm. to look at, these are all the things I'm doing that aren't working for me. And it's like 85-90% of my life. This is a huge mess. I can't do this. You know, all of the typical things that come up, but they can, and we do, and we will, but that's part of it. So then we're starting to look at, what are the habitual and repetitive thoughts you have about what you believe about yourself? How do we interrupt those thought patterns? How do we also put behaviors in place that then negate those old thought patterns? And we're really reconditioning so that yeah. whatever you've got going on in the background that's very unsupportive and where you're constantly slamming the door in your own face without really realizing it, we're working on all that underlying stuff so that you're able to decide, no, I can do this and I am going to do this in this very small baby step that we've discussed, and making those incremental changes, and they snowball on their own. You know, and sometimes there's people who have a lot of resistance at the beginning of the process, and then everything will click 4 months in. Some people make more incremental changes and they're like, oh, this is great. I'm seeing some small improvements, and things snowball. Everyone's a little bit different.
Sure.
And they do, they get frustrated. They get mad at me. And I'm like, that's okay. You can be mad at me if you want. That's what I'm here for. I'm the safe space for you to say all the things that you're afraid are true about yourself, because I see your potential, and none of this stuff is real. It's just something that you have conditioned yourself to believe. So we're going to change it. And that is the process that we go through. And usually there's some specific aim. Sometimes it's people who are interested in leaving a profession after a long period of time to do something totally different. And so we're working on that as we're working together. Sometimes it's they've gone through a big personal upheaval, a job abruptly ended or a relationship abruptly ended. And now they're like, I don't know where I'm at. I feel upside down. And so we're trying to find their footing. There's lots of different scenarios.
Yeah. You know, I know every person is so unique in their own life and their own patterns and emotions and whatever. And this may be a little bit of an unfair question, but, you know, as your book points out is, you know, we all live with in a great number of limiting beliefs. Mm-hmm. Through your counseling with people, Mackie, what would you see as probably the most common one or two limiting beliefs that people share with you that can control their life, mm-hmm. and don't allow them to experience that fulfillment?
Great question. The number one, so I'll answer it in a couple of ways. There is a theme to those limiting beliefs that all of their other limiting beliefs kind of boil down to that one foundational thing. And that foundational limiting belief is that I am not enough. And the way that shows up is we've been talking about it. I can't do that. I'm not capable of it. I don't commit to things. I don't see things through. I don't know enough about that to be successful. It's all those variations of I can't, I'm not capable, I don't have what it takes, which basically all boils down to I'm not enough. And that can be a very jarring thing to recognize about yourself when you are successful on paper, right? When your life looks like you're the picture of success and you may even operate with a high degree of self-confidence. One thing that a lot of high achieving people don't recognize, and that personally for me was quite jarring when I recognized it for myself, was self-confidence doesn't equal self-worth. And there are a ton of people walking around out there with a high degree of confidence in their ability to execute in a very specific way, and it doesn't translate to a foundational sense of self-worth. The reason for that is self-confidence is something that we build through our recognition of what we are good at, but also through what other people tell us we're good at. So there's a feedback mechanism, right? The more we do something well, the more other people tell us, hey, you're really good at that. Or the more opportunities we get to do those things because other people have recognized us. So self-confidence has this built-in feedback mechanism of validation from the outside.
Yep.
Self-worth is about knowing that you have value and that you know what you're talking about despite outside feedback, without outside feedback, without needing anyone to reflect that back to you. And not only that, but knowing and being grounded in that knowledge, even if somebody tells you you're wrong. If you can withstand that criticism and someone's disagreement without questioning yourself, that's self-worth. Okay. You're not here to only do the things that other people approve of. And you're not here to be what everybody else wants you to be. You're here to be you. And sometimes that means you're going to show up in ways that other people don't like, appreciate, agree with. Not your problem. Yeah. Most people don't have a strong foundation in that space. And the way that you can test yourself on that is back to the limiting belief piece, which is sometimes very hidden from us. If you feel the need to prove yourself over and over and over again, or compulsively almost, like you always have to prove that you're worthy of an opportunity, or that you're the best at something, or that you're good enough for something, that need to prove your value is deeply tied to the limiting beliefs that add up to I am not enough. So you can be confident and always mm-hmm. be trying to prove yourself.
That's true. And I think I experienced that at times myself. Mm-hmm. A question about that number one, I'm not enough. That is a really strong, overwhelming, limiting belief for a lot of people. How do they get there?
Mm-hmm. The way that you get there is through a couple of things. One is you have to recognize the way that you speak to yourself on a regular basis. For instance, let's say for someone, let's use your personal example earlier where you were saying you felt kind of unfulfilled by what you were doing in your regular dental practice. If you had had a thought early on before the personal example that led you to cosmetic dentistry, like, well, maybe I should be a cosmetic dentist. Maybe that would be more fulfilling. Well, what if that prompted thoughts like, well, people are going to think I'm shallow. People are going to think I'm doing this for the money. I can't do that because if I do, it means this about me. I'm just pursuing something for these very like unimportant reasons. You have to recognize that voice and what it's saying to you. The voice inside your head that shuts you down whenever you think about doing something different is the voice you need to pay attention to and have a dialogue with. Most of the time, we do not have a dialogue with that voice. We just take what it's saying as fact. That voice says, you can't do that. People are going to think you're shallow. And we're like, oh, I can't do that because people are going to think I'm shallow. No. Instead, you say, who cares what people think? Is that even true? Is that really my motivation? Question it. You have to question the voice that's telling you why you're doing something, why you are or aren't capable of something. And as you do that and you interrupt and you fact check yourself, and you start to make those different decisions. Like in a moment, I could think, well, I can't express that opinion because somebody's not going to like it. And then they're going to draw all these conclusions about my character. Let's say that's a work meeting. Well, in that moment, you need to ask yourself, why am I not going to say what I think? Because I'm afraid they're not going to like it. Am I here to be agreeable and likable to everyone? No. Therefore, in this moment, even though I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to express my opinion. And it's, you have to take the actions that change the inner dialogue over time in order to get to a place where you start to build your sense of your self-worth.
That was
it's incremental like everything else.
Yeah. That was great. I love that. Having a conversation with your own inner voice. That's mm-hmm. a great concept.
Yeah.
Kind of hard for some people to imagine, mm-hmm. But that inner voice, boy, it chirps on us all day, doesn't it?
Has a lot to say. And it's the voice of fear. It's the voice of fear. You know, it's really important for us to recognize from a psychological perspective, our egos are really important. You know, they're what carry us through the world. Your ego is not a problem. The thing about the ego, though, to keep in mind is that the ego wants you to stay safe. That is the ego's number one goal. And so any way that it can tell you that something you're about to do isn't safe for you to do, it will say that. Like, well, we're not necessarily in a great place, but it's known. So let's just stay in this known, ungreat place because mm-hmm. we don't mm-hmm. need to rock the boat or take any risks.
Yes.
If you can recognize that voice, its goal is to keep you safe. That can also be very helpful to acknowledge. Like, I know you're just trying to keep me safe. However, what you just said is not true. I'm going to take a risk and do this thing. We'll just see how it goes. It's not the end of the world either way. And remembering that for a lot of type A personalities, we can be very catastrophic thinkers. We really can. We can think that a single action or decision is going to take us from, you know, the ivory tower to under the bridge in 0.2 seconds, that we're just going to lose everything because we've taken a chance. No, it's just it's a habit of binary thinking and catastrophic thinking, all again, to err on the side of safety and security, but usually in ways that are too limiting to be worth it. And that's where we have to reassess, why am I operating this way? Is this really working for me? If the answer is no, then I have to think and behave differently. And I do it in these very small ways.
Yeah. Years ago, I read a book called The Aladdin Factor, and I think it's written by James Cromwell. I can't be 100%. I need to get his name. But in that book, he talked about fear and mm-hmm. how fear can paralyze us. And he said, you know, the reality of it in research is that the degree with which we envision this overwhelming, paralyzing fear, that it only comes true 2% of the time. And of that 2%, a very small percentage of that fear that the enormous fear is really realized. And so we let 2% thinking shut us down.
Yep.
And you, when I read that, I thought, wow, this just does not make sense. So mm-hmm. it changed my thinking about the fear factor and the monger that we develop in our mind, you know, that inner voice mm-hmm. that chirps on us and just says, boy, don't do this because this is going to happen. And the other thing I realized, Mackie, is, you know, the 80-20 principle, that 20% of what we do gives us 80% of our results.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, let's pare that down a little bit and to where 4% gives us 64% of our results. And so, you know, prioritization, mm-hmm. go down to that 4%, find out what it is and live there. Mm-hmm. And then don't let that 2% of your fear factor take away the joy of your 4% of your activity.
Right.
You
know,
when you look at things and you let your you have that argument with your inner voice and let your mind of reason kind of choke that inner voice, there's a great opportunity on the other side of the fence.
Absolutely. It just, and the thing is, you know, I like to talk about the transference of discomfort because yes. people think this is going to be a really uncomfortable process and, you know, yeah, but you're already uncomfortable. It's just a familiar kind of uncomfortable. And
yes,
you just need to be willing to shift into an unfamiliar kind of uncomfortable in a way that's going to move you forward. Cause you know, chances are where you are already kind of sucks. So why yeah. not just be okay with continuing that for a little bit, but in the service of something that's really going to move you forward instead of keeping you in the same place.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how we get very comfortable being in that environment and element, as you say, and toxicity, mm-hmm. we get comfortable in it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't. We're such creatures of familiarity. It's what it feels like, you know, whatever becomes familiar to us and that we can endure, we can get comfortable with, technically speaking. But the challenge is, you know, I say this all the time. I really believe one of the primary challenges of high achieving people is that they have these very high standards for their professional success and output. And very low personal expectations for what that does to them in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of what you're talking about is, you know, how can we become so comfortable in situations that are really so bad for us in so many ways? And I think what we're really doing is we're saying this is in service to this other thing that I've decided is the priority, which is my success, the money that I'm making, my status. And so if I have to endure terrible people, awful relationships, a really poisonous mindset, not taking care of my physical health, not interacting with my family, all in service to whatever sacrifice I'm making at the professional altar, then that's what I'm going to do. So a lot of high achieving people actually have pretty low expectations personally. And they decide that if I'm achieving these things, that's the price you have to pay. Not even that it's worth it, but that we're taught like this is the sacrifice you make in order to have those things, even if it's really not okay with you.
Yeah.
And it takes, again, that consciousness because we can go into autopilot around what's familiar, even when it's terrible. And that's so key to the process is to take stock, wake up for a second, look at what's going on and decide if you're really okay with it.
Yeah. You know, it... Personally, from my standpoint, it's hard for me to understand why people will continue to exist in that toxic environment and not give themselves the opportunity to live a life that is so fulfilling or the possibility of the life that is so fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And that's where people just need to know about you, Mackie.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
They need to come and spend 6 months with you. And so describe... again, just real briefly here with the audience, what is the best way for them to get a hold of you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what that you say you work with them initially 6 months. Is there Is there more time that they can align themselves with you if they feel like they need a little more richness to what's happening in their life?
Absolutely. Yeah. We can, 6 months is my minimum commitment. Let's just put it that way. Cause I think it takes that long for people to really get those changes that they want to see in their lives and trust themselves in the process. Uh-huh. But definitely it's possible to work together longer. And I also just mentioned that during that 6 month period of time, even though we're only talking, a couple of times a month live, that my clients always have access to me. So I use this little app called Voxer, which is great. It's a way to send voice messages very quickly. And that kind of asynchronous voice communication can be very powerful. So if someone's having a struggle and they're like, you know, today's been really bad, I've kind of spiraled back downward, you know, then I can chat with them. We chat a lot kind of in between sessions. Yeah. And so the best way to find me is, I know my name is not the easiest to spell. So I'm sure you'll share my website in the show notes.
it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. Yep. But there is a way to contact me through my website. I also have a podcast that I've started where it's not interview format. It's just me kind of monologuing on the different things that are relevant to high achievers, called Musings of a High Achiever, that can be supportive. Of course, there's the book for people who are not 100% convinced that they want to jump right into something one-on-one that can help get them started. I will say for myself personally, I know there's a couple of struggles with this. It is very hard for people, regardless of how much money they make and how well off they are, to make a personal decision to invest in themselves. If you don't have that self-worth thing worked out, it's going to be a difficult decision for you. When I was leaving my corporate job and I had done a bunch of this work and I knew what I wanted to do going forward, I hired a coach for 6 months because I knew I needed someone to hold me accountable to getting over that finish line. Yep. And that was what we worked on. Okay, it's scary. You're going to walk away from this 13-year career that you've put all of your time and effort into. Let's make sure you do that because you've decided that's where your fulfillment lies. And right. It was really critical to my own personal process to do that for myself. And if you had a repetitive experience where you keep trying to make these changes and find that you can make it maybe a little way forward and then you kind of plateau, that is when working with someone else can be very helpful, because self-awareness is key to the process, but it's not enough to know, to think you know you need what you need to do. It's very different to actually then do the execution piece of it. Yeah.
And I think, you know, vulnerability is an issue, and keeping themselves personally accountable is an issue. And that's where, you know, having a professional such as yourself, that they can easily and quickly learn to trust and commit to their personal growth. I strongly believe that anybody who is successful and reaches a high level of personal fulfillment, and then also the fulfillment in their wishes and their dreams and their tangible goals, is directly proportionate to the degree with which they commit to personal development. Mm-hmm. And that's where I have such a strong belief in what you do. And, you know, this is why I wanted you to come on, because this is an element that is not present in dentistry. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about this much. We talk about dental consultants, which are more concerned about bottom line and the transactional aspect of the business. They do not get into the transformation or talk about it hardly at all. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their stuff is motivation. As you said earlier, that's just a little spark that once they go home from the weekend where the motivation is, give it a couple of days, the spark's gone, and we settle right back into mediocrity.
That's right.
And so having someone such as yourself, a professional individual that will kind of like per se, I'm going to say gently hold our hand through the process and let us know that we're safe and it's okay to be vulnerable and to grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Into our greatness.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Mackie, this has been great today. I appreciate you spending time with me. I have a great sense that we need to do this again. We need to follow up on this. I think there's quite a bit more that we can talk about. I have a couple of pages of notes here that we didn't even talk about.
Great.
I'm going to review this, and I'm actually going to listen to this again and make notes from this. And I can assure you that we're gonna spend time together one more time. I did listen to your podcast. I like the monologue effect. Mm-hmm. I enjoy doing monologues myself at times. You get to a point that there's things and thoughts and feelings that you need to share or you feel are important for the audience to hear. Mm-hmm. It's our time. It's my time to preach.
That's right.
I did appreciate your podcast, and I really look forward to doing this again. So again, thank you very much for spending time. I think there's a lot of valuable information in this for our audience. We will put your information in the show notes so that they can get hold of you. So
sounds great. Thanks, Dr. John. I appreciate it.
You betcha. And this brings us to the conclusion of today's episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. I'm your host, and my guest has been Mackie Masala.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.